Have you ever had one of those experiences where someone else made you feel like you weren't worth as much as the people around you? Where you were somehow less than other people? Many years ago, before, kind of in a transition time between high school and university, some of us need transition times between high school and university. Some of you are just ready to go off and be great people, and some of us were not. And I was working for a department store. I was living up in Ottawa, and I was working for a department store up there. And shortly after I started working there, they went out of business. And it wasn't because I started working there. It was, that was just a big coincidence. Although retail was never, I was never really great at retail and all those kind of jobs. But it went out of business. And I had a bit of an it took some time for the store to close down. But when it closed, it was very difficult to find another job. I had a high school education. I didn't yet have any kind of university or college education to my name. I was living in a city which I'd been living in for about a year and a half, but I didn't really know enough people to be able to find great jobs through networking or anything like that. And I was putting out resumes, and I was going to the employment center, and nothing was showing up. And I had rent to pay. And one of the quirks of my personality at that time in my life was that I was very, very proud, and there was no way I was going to call up mom and dad and say, I'm in trouble, can't pay my rent, can you help? There was certainly no way I was going to call them up and say, I'm in trouble, can I come home? There was no way that was going to happen. We were lucky if we had phone calls at that time in my life that said, hey, how you doing? So that was kind of the situation. And I found myself finding my way to the welfare office. We don't call it welfare anymore. Now it's called Ontario Works, but everybody still knows it's still welfare. I found myself at the welfare office. This middle-class kid, all of a sudden, in my late teens, maybe I was 20, I don't think I was 20 yet, standing in this long lineup of people who were not like me. And I finally made it to an appointment with a social worker who looked at me like I was nothing. And I know not all social workers are like this. I got the cream of the crop. And she looked at me like I was really nothing. And when I said to her, listen, this is the situation. I was working for this department store. It went out of business. I put resumes everywhere. I don't think you really have. It was clear that her assumption was that every word that came out of my mouth was a lie, that I was just trying, as is everybody, to just get free money, get easy money. If she only knew what it was like to stand in that office, stand in those lines, be looked at the way that she was looking at me, she would know it's not easy. It's not easy money. It was shameful to my core. It was embarrassing. I felt like I was nothing. My whole life I'd been told I was somebody. Again, I was a kid. I grew up in a lovely middle-class home. And here I was, all of a sudden, what was being reflected back to me from somebody else was, you waste of space on the planet. It's nice that I have a job because of you, but I know that you're just can't be bothered to work or whatever the case was. It was one summer of my life. I can't imagine what it's like to live that way for years and years, or for generations. To everywhere you go, have people look at you as if you're nothing, as if you're somehow less, that you don't exist. See, we have a tendency as human beings, we really like categories. We like to be able to define and categorize things. It's in our DNA. It's right from the beginning when Adam and Eve were created and God said, I want you to look at all these animals and put them into categories. I want you to name them. It's in our DNA. And it's not a bad thing in itself, except that with all the things God has put in us, sin gets in the way and it becomes a bad thing. So we not only categorize things under their scientific labels of whether it's a mammal or it's a fish or it's a bird or things like that, but we also like to categorize based on things that aren't true. And one of the primary ways we categorize is we categorize people. We say, either you're somebody of worth or you're not. Either you're a human being with dignity or you're not. Either you're one of the people who has influence and power or you're one of the powerless. Either you have worth or you're worthless. We somehow seem to constantly have these two groups that we just almost innately split people into. I'm going to come back to that because first I want to travel back to first century Galilee, which is the main place where Jesus was teaching. And this is the setting of the scripture passage that Nancy just read for us and has to do with the way that we split people into two groups. Galilee, I was talking about this a couple weeks ago. Galilee was the place where they had nothing. This was the place where rich landowners came in and they stole people's land. People who had been farming the land for years, rich landowners were coming in and saying, sorry, you don't have deeds to that land, it's ours now. The Roman army always needed more land. They needed places for their troops to camp. They needed places to get the food. And so they took over acres and acres and acres, thousands of acres of farmland, and they just took it from the people, and the people were left with nothing. They were left having to go into the cities and sit on the side of the street and beg because their way of making a living had been taken from them. In the Old Testament, there are some key laws which were supposed to protect the nation of Israel from ever having poverty in its midst. One of those laws were, farmers, farm your field, but don't go back over it for a second time. Leave stuff in there so that when somebody comes along who doesn't have enough money so that they can feed themselves, they can just go into your field, they can glean the wheat that's been left over, and therefore they can eat. Nobody needs to go hungry. Unfortunately, the people of Israel were not that different, took God's great laws and twisted them all around and ignored some of them and threw other ones of them out completely. And there were people living in abject poverty in the nation of Israel. There were people who were oppressing the poor. They were 2 weeks ago, we read a passage that talked about them as being harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. The Roman emperor had come in and he had taken out anybody who was a leader or anybody who had leadership potential, and he'd taken them out of the communities and he'd sent them to the four corners of the Roman Empire so that the people who were oppressed would not step up and fight for themselves. They would just continue to be beaten down. Because how do you know that you're the elite? Because there's somebody to compare yourself to. How do you know that you have worth? Because there are people around you that clearly don't have worth. How do you know that you have power? Because there are people that you can wield your power over. This is one of the saddest things about our world, is that we live with this idea that there are two kinds of people. We live with the idea that group A is the best. These are the people who, man, they got to be born into a place like America or Canada. They're people who have jobs and have education and have food not just on their table but in their freezers. These are the people who have air conditioning. These are the people who have cars to drive. And then there's group B. These people, some of them were born in America or Canada. Many of them were born in India or in Bolivia or Haiti or somewhere in Africa. We have these two groups of people. And don't we all want to be part of group A? How many here want to be powerless and worthless? How many here want to have somebody look at you and treat you like you're nothing? I'm willing to bet that almost all the women in this room, at some point in time in your life, you've had an experience where you felt when somebody looked at you, you were an object, not a human being. We do that to people. More and more, I think the same is happening to you men in the group, in the room. People are looking at you like you're an object. Senior citizens, how often is your voice and your wisdom and your life experience heard, and how much is a hand just put out that says, you've got nothing because you are nothing? I wish we had some of what the Asian cultures have with their respect of the elders, because we've lost something in that. We split people into two groups, those who are worth something and those who aren't worth something. And here's the thing. Jesus offers a different way. See, the basic assumption that there are two groups is faulty. The basic assumption that there are people who have worth and there are people who don't have worth, that there are people who are powerful and people who are powerless, that there are people who are people and people who are objects is a faulty basic assumption. See, if you're in group A, you have to do everything in your power to stay in group A. You have to squirrel away all your money. You have to hold it tight. You have to protect yourself. You have to make sure, like, it's all well and good that there's starving people over here, but I need to save just to make sure that I never know a moment's hunger. They come second because we in group A, we have to protect it and make sure we never fall into group B. And if you're in group B, you have two choices. You can sit over here in group B and you can hang your head and you can just accept it. I'm worthless. I don't deserve what they deserve. I suck. And you can just take it. Or you can fight back and you can say, I'm going to be in that group. I'm going to do everything in my power in that group. But here's the other assumption that goes with it. We believe that there's only so much room in this group. If there's going to be room for me to come over here and in here, it's because I'm going to kick out somebody who's here. I'm going to fight to be put over here. They think they can oppress me. Well, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to beat them. The most amazing thing that happened in Rwanda, you remember in the 90s, there was a horrendous, horrendous genocide that happened in Rwanda. It happened because there was a group of people, all of them Rwandans, and somehow they all came to believe that they were two different groups of people. There were Hutus and there were Tutsis. And that was a false dichotomy in itself. And the Hutu people started to think about the Tutsi people as cockroaches. Well, let me tell you, it is easy. As someone who has lived with cockroaches, it's a thrilling thing to step on it and hear that crunch. Because it's a really gross thing to turn on the lights and see these little things go scurrying. So if you're in group A and you've labeled everybody in group B a cockroach, you can step on them. You can take out your machete and you can behead them. And if you're in group B and they're saying, hey, you cockroaches, what do you want to do? You want to pick up your own machete and you want to go over them and show them who's the real cockroach. But in Rwanda, the most amazing thing happened. Group B, when peace came at last, group B did not come over to group A and just flip it around and turn them into the cockroaches. Instead, there has been miraculous and incredible reconciliation as Christian leaders have pulled together the two groups and helped them see each other's humanity so that no longer could the Hutus look at the Tutsis and say, you're just a cockroach. Instead, they had to look at them and say, you're a human being. And the Tutsis were able to stand up and say, we are human beings, and so are you. Because we turn our oppressors into demons. We turn them into evil things. We take away and we strive to take away their humanity as well. But Jesus said, there's a different way to do this. This idea that there's two groups, that's not even true. The idea that there are people of worth and there are people who don't have worth, that's not even true. See, we are all made in God's image, every single one of us. When God breathed life into Adam, he breathed himself, his spirit, into the first human being. And every breath we take is a reminder that the spirit of God himself has been breathed into all of us. Whether you are a multimillionaire or whether you live on welfare, it doesn't matter. God has breathed his own life into you. Every single person is created in the image of God. There is not one person who has no worth. There is not one person who's an object. There's no one person who is completely powerless because we have the spirit of God himself breathing life into us. Jesus said there's a different way. Now he was talking to the people in group B. That was his audience. He was talking to people who were oppressed. He was talking to people who were bullied. He was talking to people who, for the most part, were just hanging their heads going, I guess this is my life. It's not fair, but I guess this is my life. Every once in a while, some of them would rise up and say no, and they'd bring up swords and they'd go fight to try and make room for themselves over on the other side. But the Roman Empire was really good at squashing those down. Throw you in prison, exile you to a place where you didn't know anybody and nobody knew you, or ultimately crucifixion. Thousands and thousands of people crucified because they didn't just sit there and hang their heads and go, I guess this is my life. And Jesus said to them, there's a different way. Everywhere he went, every time he looked at somebody, you know, one person's look can make you feel like you're an object, like you're nothing. Jesus' look at you makes you feel like you are queen of the world, like you are king of the world, like you are someone extraordinary. Jesus just looked at people. Oh man, I wish that I was there. I wish I could really experience it, because Jesus would just look at you. And I imagine that people just stood taller. Their shoulders went back. They lifted their heads. And even if just for a moment, they knew that they were somebody, they knew what it was like to have worth, to have dignity, to be a human being. Every single one of us in this room who follows Jesus has that same effect on the people we come in contact with, or at least we should. Imagine if everybody here, left here, and with everybody that you looked at this week, they saw that you saw them and they were somebody. Can you imagine how quickly our world would change if just us, if we did that with everybody we looked at, if we looked at people the same way as Jesus looked at them? Because Jesus looked at people, and what did he see? He saw the spirit of life, the spirit of God in them, bursting forth out of them. See, Jesus offers a different way. And that's what this scripture passage, this really difficult scripture passage we read, is about. Because when we read the scripture passage, this is why it's difficult. It makes us think, Carolyn, can I get you to pull it up? It makes us think that what Jesus is saying is, okay, you people in group B, and this is how it's been used. It's been used to say to those people in group B, hang your heads, this is your life, deal with it, take it. And then in Christendom, what we used to say was then also, and don't worry, it'll get better for you in heaven. What a horrible message. I mean, it will get better in heaven. That's not the horrible message. But we have used passages like this, words from Jesus himself, to hold ourselves secure over here. I need to wear thicker heels. I keep falling in the cracks. We have used words of Jesus to make sure we were secure over here by making sure they knew they had to stay over there. Oh, that's not what these words have to say. Jesus says to them, he says to the people who are in group B, the people who feel like objects, who feel like nothing, he says to them, you have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. This was an Old Testament proverb. This was an Old Testament law. It was a law of justice. If I hit Jim and I take out his eye, then we go to court and I lose my eye. Or, quite possibly, I just have to pay whatever somebody's decided is the worth of an eye. If somebody gets in a fight and your tooth is knocked out, their tooth gets to come out. Here's the thing. We've read it like, oh, this is awful. We Christians, we don't agree with that. You should turn the other cheek. But that was actually a law of justice. It's a law we could do well to remember in a society that loves suing people. In a society where multi-million dollar awards are offered. You know, you've heard the stories of like the burglar who was crawling across somebody's skylight, fell in and was awarded millions of dollars because, I don't know, there was a sign up, there was no sign on the roof that said, beware, you could fall through the skylight if you're crawling up here. This is saying, somebody takes your eye out, yep, you get their eye, or the financial equivalent of their eye. But no more. You don't get to use this as an opportunity to just make it rich off the other person. But Jesus is saying, even that, you've heard it said, even this great idea of justice, even that is not what I'm telling you. I'm telling you something different. I'm telling you there's a different way. Here's the different way. I say to you, do not resist an evildoer. Now, we hear that word resist and we think it means Stand over here, hang your head, and just accept what it says. Accept what your lot in life is. That's not what it means. That word, if you dig it into the Greek, it speaks of resisting violently. It speaks of what people have done when they've been over here, and instead of hanging their heads, they've said, we're going to take up swords, and we're going to knock out as many people over there as we can so that we can take their spots over in that group, because we deserve to be in that group. Jesus is saying, no, don't resist. Don't fight back. Don't buy into this basic faulty assumption that there are two groups of people, because that in itself is what the problem is. There aren't two groups of people. The problem is there aren't people who are human and people who are not human, people of worth and people without any dignity. That is a false assumption to start with. So that what you have to do when you're over here is not fight back, not be violent, not try and just move yourself over to there. What you need to do is you need to come up with some kind of a creative way so that they can see you as a human being. Much like the reconciliation work in Rwanda happened, where they said, okay, you need to stop seeing cockroaches and start seeing human beings. That's what this passage is about. He gives three examples. The first example, if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek also. Anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek also. Now, I need a volunteer. I'm not going to hit you hard. I need a volunteer. Rick, can you volunteer? Okay. There's a couple of things I won't hit you, Bill. Pardon? No.
He needs a good slap.
Oh, he needs a good slap, so I will hit him hard. Okay. Here's what you have to know about the culture that Jesus was speaking to. The first thing is there was a difference between your right hand and your left hand. Your left hand is what you did all the unclean things with. So think as gross as you can think, that's what your left hand was for. You didn't eat with it. You didn't shake hands. This is why we shake hands with our right hands, not our left hands. It goes back to this kind of idea that your left hand, you don't touch people with it. You keep it aside for unclean things. So all you've got to work with is your right hand. If I want to hit Rick, I don't really. I kind of do, actually. If I want to hit Rick on his right cheek, point to which one's your right cheek. To do that, the only way I can hit him with my right hand is with a backhand, this way. That's what you did to slaves. A backhanded slap says, you're nothing, you're no one, you're an object. You're not even worth my time or my attention or anything else. I'm going to go like this to you. And Jesus says, you are not nothing. You are not an object. You are a human being. And if somebody's going to hit you, they deserve to be hit like a human being. So turn your other cheek. So you turn me this cheek. I either have to hit you this way or this way. You can sit down now. If you need to talk about the violence Carolyn has at home, we'll talk later. See what Jesus is saying? He's saying, so somebody wants to hit you as if you're nothing, want to backhand you, want to knock you out of their way. That was how masters hit their slaves. Just, you nothing. Turn your other cheek. Because let's face it, they're going to hate you anyways. Turn your other cheek. And force them to deal with you as a human being, somebody of worth and somebody of dignity. The next one, if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give them your cloak as well. People Jesus was talking to, they wore two main garments. They wore their cloak, and then they wore a coat on top of that. If somebody comes up to you and says, hey, give me your coat, and you're on the B side, you have no choice. If somebody with great power comes and they want to take it, if you've got really cool shoes and somebody wants to take your shoes, they're going to do it. If they're stronger than you, if they're tougher than you, if they're meaner than you, they can take whatever they want. Let's face it, let's be real about what our world is like. Jesus says, not if somebody wants to take your coat, fight them off with everything that you have. He says, no, give them your cloak as well. Now, let me tell you what happens when a person of that day and age took off their cloak. There was nothing left. They didn't have shorts and a t-shirt underneath. They didn't have their underwear underneath. There was nothing left. All of a sudden, you have somebody standing there, stark naked, and you have stripped it of them. all of a sudden, you're not so great. There's a story told from South Africa during the worst times of apartheid. And there was a group of white South Africaners who were bulldozing through a village. And they had essentially just, they didn't care that there were black people who lived there. They were just getting bulldozed out of the way. And they went to this village, and the only people in the village at the time were the women. The men had all gone off to work. The women were there, and they're looking at these Dutch men coming with their bulldozers ready to just do whatever they had to do to get rid of them. These women knew something about their oppressors, that they knew that they were hyper-religious human beings who had very strict ideas about what was proper and what was not proper. It went way beyond, you know, no playing cards on Sundays and things like that. It went to the fact that that kind of idea that the human body is a thing of evil and should never be looked at. So what did these women do? They stood in a line in front of their village. They stripped off all their clothes, and they stood there proud because they had none of the same issues that these Dutch men had, who took one look, looked away, ran away, never came back. See what religion does. It makes us afraid of naked women. That's the lesson for today. This is what Jesus is saying. He's saying, find some creative way to force those over there to see you as a human being, to see you not as a cockroach, not as a nothing, but as a human being. Because the reality, the idea that there's two groups is a false idea altogether. What's the next slide? If anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go another mile also. Roman soldiers were allowed to ask anybody they passed on the street to carry their pack for a mile. They were kind of walking along. Their pack was getting heavy. They could pull you off. They could say, Janet, we need you. You need to carry my pack for the next mile. But here's the thing. The Roman law only allowed it for 1 mile. So it didn't matter what you were doing. It didn't matter how crippled you were. If you had back problems, if you had breathing problems, it was a hot day, it didn't matter. You were forced to carry that pack for 1 mile. But the law only permitted it for 1 mile. After that, you had to be paid a fair wage. So Jesus is saying, okay, so they're going to force you to carry the pack for 1 mile? Don't give it back. Carry it a second mile. Because then they have to pay you for your labor. They have to treat you not as a donkey who's just a pack animal to carry their stuff. They have to treat you as a human being who has worth and dignity and deserves to be paid for the work that they do. Are you seeing what Jesus is saying? He's not saying, hang your head down and just accept that this is your lot in life. He's also not saying, pick up a sword and go fight, because the reality is the people who are sitting here, they can't afford swords. Big sticks, they just don't fight so well against swords and armors and all the people who have all the stuff over there. And then the last verse, some commentators aren't sure how this fits. Give to everyone who begs from you and do not refuse anyone who wants to borrow from you. I think this is just simply Jesus saying, listen up. There are not two groups. We are all created in the image of God. Yes, some people have and some people don't have. But the moment you can see God's image reflected in their eyes, then you have to share what you have. That's the discipline. That's the spiritual discipline that we need to figure out, that we need to grab onto. Is every single person I look at, do I see Jesus Christ reflected in them? Do I see God's image? Or do I still see them as over there and me over here? If I'm over on this side and I look at the people over there, do I see them as human beings or do I see them as evil, demonic oppressors? Because whichever side you think you stand on, we are all made in the image of God. And it is all of us who has to learn to see God, see the spirit of life in the other. That's the way that Jesus puts forth. That's the only way this sad world is going to change, that things are going to get different. It's up to us to act as if there's only one group. No one else out there is going to do it. If there's going to be changes, it's because we're going to make the changes. If people are going to think that they have worth, it's because we're going to look at them, and in our very look, they're going to know they have worth. That's our call.